When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk Splits, a very special edition because today, coming back to the show, are my buddies and my pals, two of my favorite people on earth, both from the band Off, Autry Fulbright II and Keith Morris. Very excited to be talking to my buddies on the show today. Bittersweet though, because they are here, because it is the final Off show. If you are listening to this when it came out, it will be this Saturday, July 20th. We will be saying farewell to Off, and it will be at Le Poisson Rouge. And I say we, I mean Fucked Up, my band, and myself. And that'll be in New York City. There's also some screenings they're doing of their movie, Free LSD, all over the United States. And we'll talk about all of this in 1 second. But first, to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutofpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and the show producer and the guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and you get the message to me. You can also find me on various forms of social media at Left for Damien. To support the show, tell all your friends about it. Let them all know that you enjoy this podcast that you hear each and every week over on the Turned Out of Punk, twice a week over here on the Turned Out of Punk feed. And that is that. As I said off the top, I play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. We will be going back on the road tomorrow. You can hear from my voice that I've just played a show tonight. We're already kind of currently on tour. And you can check out what we're going to be doing over there at fuckedup.cc. We got a brand new record called Another Day, which we will be touring on right now, I guess. So you can grab copies and come and see us. And yeah, check us out. All right, on to today's show. As I said, this is a Turned Out of Punk split. So coming back, Autry Fulbright and Keith Morris. Both have been on the show twice. Keith with Black Flag once and Keith solo once. And then Autry's been on twice just solo. And so it makes sense that they would come back on together to say goodbye to Off. Autry joined recently sort of on the last record and has been part of the band for the last few years. And this band kind of entered this sort of second chapter that they've been in, and they've made a movie, made an incredible record, and are kind of calling it a day on their own terms. And it's something that's admirable when a band can kind of do that and realize that it's time, you know what, let's just go and do our own things and spread our wings. And I feel like Off is a band that I was there for the very beginning of. Like, I remember Dimitri coming up to me at the Glass House, Dimitri from Off, and saying he was going to form a band with Keith Morris and they were going to call it Off. And he had all these plans, and look at it. Like, look what happened from there. I wrote their first bio for Vice way back when. I've toured with them. I've played all over the world. Anyway, I'm not going to ramble on giving you my Off resume. I'm just trying to add a little bit of gravitas to what's happening for me personally. And you hear I get emotional in this episode talking about it, because these are my friends and they're people that I've grown up with in the last few years, aged with in the last few years, and more than the last few years, like decade plus now. And it's going to be, as I said, bittersweet to say goodbye. As I also said, there's going to be some screenings of their movie, Free LSD. You can see this thing all over the U.S. The dates will be in the bottom of the description. As always, there's going to be some Q&As at some of these things as well. And yeah, it's going to be, go out and see this thing. I cannot wait to see this movie. And they will be playing one more show after this. By the time you hear it, they're going to be doing their last final show in Los Angeles. July 26th. So coming up very soon. That'll be in their final show ever in LA with Surfport. So get your tickets. I think most of them are gone, but if you can, get them, because come say goodbye to one of the great bands of this era. I loved getting to see them every single time. And yeah, it's a true supergroup, a true punk rock supergroup. And yeah, I'm like, I don't want to get emotional again post show. I'm tired and you know, I'm going on tour, so the emotions are already kind of high. So I'm just gonna shut up, let you sit back, relax, and enjoy Autry Fulbright II and Keith Morris on Turned Out of Punk Splits. Goodbye off.
So speaking of conversations amongst father and son, I've been working on cleaning up a script based on my book, where I've actually had to create conversations not only amongst my dad and myself, which were extremely rare. You know, you're playing the role of a father. My dad never played the role of a father. There was never any, hey, are you interested in any girls? Or, hey, what's your favorite movie right now? Or, hey, what are you reading? Never anything like that. It was all just work, work, work. And so now I'm also creating conversations between my mom and my dad. Like, what would my mom say to my dad in this situation? You know, it's I just finished and I just sent it into the guys who were in charge of the script. But it was like the whole time I was doing this, and I've been working on this. I mean, I just got back from a NoFX tour over in Europe, Circle Jerks and NoFX. And while I was there, I was chipping away on these conversations. And I just sent it off, and it's like, I hope they grasp on to, latch on to what I've written here and place it in the script. So I'm as Autry's telling you, he's not a dad, I'm not a dad. I've had the opportunity to be a dad twice.
Only twice.
And
the two that got away.
or as some of them say, easy come, easy go, or whatever, you know. But I feel for you.
You know what? I feel like you get to a certain point and you look back on your parents and there's definitely stuff that you realize your parents could have done better, but you also get to a certain stage of adulthood and realize, you know what? Like, it's really fucking hard to be an adult. And my parents, for their failings, did the best they thought they were able to do. And yeah, I realize now as a struggling parent, I just hope my kids come to that realization sooner rather than later. And that I'm alive to be there for them to realize I'm not such a bad person, because, but it's interesting. We start talking about family, because before we got on this call, I was thinking about a way to set this up. And I'm like, I think of Autry, you like a brother, and I look at you, Keith, like an uncle. So I feel like a very familial kind of vibe sitting down with two of my favorite people in the whole wide world to have this conversation today.
Likewise.
Totally. Backing you on this, brother.
We've traversed the world together. We've been around all these different places over the years. And I think it's so great that this is kind of, I guess, this podcast send off to off, because the fact that I get to see both of you guys together in this band for the last few years has been kind of the cherry on the off Sunday for me. No diss on Steve. I love Steve.
Yeah.
Ever too, but if there's one person that I could see stepping in there that I'd be just as happy to see with off, it's been you, Autry. And so it's been great that we get to kind of bring it all together this afternoon hanging out.
Yeah, it's been great the past year and a half or so that we've been able to see each other so much. Like, we saw you in Toronto. We just saw you what, a little over 6 months ago.
We played with you in London. That was a total blast. You guys were ripping.
That was great. About a week before that, we were in Spain. Or maybe, was it a week before or after? Yeah. Kind of a whirlwind, but it reminds me of when we first started becoming good friends over a decade ago, where I saw you in Tokyo, and then we flew how many hours? Like 14 hours, and then played the same day because of the international dateline in Austin. So we've had some great experiences. It sometimes are clusters of hanging out, which is great.
Yeah, that's the, I guess the great thing about being in a band is the fact that you get to have friends from all over the world. The bittersweet part is the fact that you only get these sort of like, you know, intense bursts of hanging out that are interspersed by years in some cases. And yeah, what was NoFX's goodbye tour like in Europe?
Well, the Circle Jerks were, we were invited along by them because they worship the ground that we walk upon. And being treated like royalty, that's something I've never really experienced. And if I have, it's only been in spurts here and there. But it was a blast. I mean, it was, we played two nights in Milan, 10,000 people. And the Circle Jerks, if we were to tour on our own, we wouldn't play for 10,000 people in 3 or 4 months. So here we are playing all of these festival shows, and we're averaging 5,000 people a night.
Wow.
Well, that's wild.
Yeah, it was really wild. Plus, they're really great guys. You know, we've heard all of these reports throughout the years. Well, they don't know how to play, and you know, Fat Mike's this and Fat Mike's that, and it's like, set all of that stuff aside, because when they hit the stage and those people in the crowd go fucking apeshit, it doesn't matter. All of that stuff gets tossed right out the window. All of the stuff that everybody, all the extracurricular garbage that everybody has to say about them gets erased off of the chalkboard. It doesn't even matter. What matters is sitting to the side of the stage and listening to 5,000 people sing every fucking word. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
With an Italian accent, even. I was just in Italy on vacation a couple weeks ago, and I noticed and was reminded by the fact that they don't have a robust live music scene when it comes to a lot of the stuff that I like. I'll put it that way. There's concerts, obviously, but for the type of music that we take for granted, especially in North America and even in other parts of Europe, there isn't a scene. There isn't really a lot of venues where bands are coming through. As we all know, Italy is probably one of the rarest places where you perform. I've only performed there a few times over the past decade, but Milan in particular is probably one of the places that you would end up playing the most. Even so, I think for Italy, one person there that loves your music probably equates to like three people anywhere else. So you really play to like 30,000 people any other place outside of Italy. So having a show like that in Italy, or two of them, pretty awesome.
Much pasta.
Oh, I bet the food was great.
It's interesting though, like with Italy, because there is such an amazing history of punk and new wave stuff and hardcore during the 80s and I guess late 70s it starts. But yeah, you're right, because like Italy's the one place. We've had one really great show in Milan, but for the most part, it's been not a great place for fucked up to go to.
I'd love to play there more, but Rome, I never played Rome. I played Sicily, played this place called Desio. I have no idea where that is, but it's one of those places. You think of like Spain or France, there's so many other places, smaller markets that you can play there as a punk band or as a indie rock band or whatever, but you just don't see that as much. But there's plenty of other things to do, and it's a beautiful, beautiful country for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot more culture to kind of immerse yourself in to w worry about than this punk stuff. You're like, I just like there's classics that I can kind of.
We also got to see Raw Power, who were on the bill. One
Oh,
of the days they were on the bill,
that's
and
awesome.
they were really cool. They were really, really cool.
Did you go to Italy back in the day with the Circle Jerks?
Never, never. See, the thing that's so great about Off for me is that it opened doors that the Circle Jerks never opened. Because when we first started, our agenda was we're not playing with them. We're not playing with Rancid. We're not playing with Bad Religion. We're not playing with any punk rock bands. It's not that we didn't want to be associated with them. It's just we knew further down the line we were going to be playing with them. But for the most part, we were playing festivals. We were playing, like, I remember one of my favorite shows that I've ever played was at Stubbs Barbecue during South by Southwest. The opening band was this band that they obviously had listened to The Replacements, called the Smith and
Oh,
Wessons.
yeah.
And we played, and then Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark played. And I was just like, dude, the sun is blazing. This is a nighttime band. This is supposed to be a band where there's fog coming on, smoke coming off of the stage. And here they are playing in the middle of the day. And they were great. They were, of the new wave bands, they were way, way happening. And then TV on the Radio played, and it was
Wow.
like, this is awesome. I'm getting to hear all of these. I'm getting to hear a couple of bands that I would not normally go out of my way to see. And here I am. I had to go out and TV on the Radio. I had to go out and buy a couple of their compact discs. They were awesome. Plus, they were great guys. Plus, one of the guys in the band, the drummer at the time, his younger brother.
Kareem, probably you're talking about Jaleel, the drummer.
Was his younger brother was the lead vocalist in Cerebral Palsy.
Oh.
Oh, wait, maybe you're talking about Jafet. But anyway, all those guys are great.
Yeah. Well, they're super. It's weird. 'Cause like, I would have thought that by now they would have had that sort of like massive comeback. I always think about that when I play them in the car for the kids and Lauren and go on one of my monologues about music. I'm like, this band is one of those bands that's just like, even though they were appreciated and people loved them and they had a fan base in their time, like nowhere near where it should be when you go back and listen to those records.
Who knows what the future holds? Maybe another Stubbs event with Orchestral Maneuvers in the Day.
Yeah.
But instead of fog, you've got the barbecue mesquite smoke coming up. I think we ate at Stubbs the last time we were in Austin.
Well, every time we play at Stubbs, it's when they're giving you free food, how could you turn that down?
That was the glory era of South by Southwest, I think. Like that was a glory period when we were, when Vice was going and there's all that kind of soft money flowing in for sponsorships. So you had those crazy shows with like Motorhead and who knows what. It feels like that's never coming back.
Yeah, I don't know. It was nice while it lasted though. I remember running into you at a show, maybe right after you played, and I saw you somewhere downtown. Dimitri Coates from Off, he claims that we met during South By, which I don't doubt that might have been the case. It was one of those places where, like, you never know who you're going to meet. It's this dizzying kind of, like, disorienting maybe experience where you're running into people that you normally don't run into, but they're all in this like 4 or 5 block radius. And it was a lot of fun while it lasted.
Actually, I've got a photo from the first year that I met you, Keith, and the first year that I met Fat Mike. It's you, me, Sandy from Fucked Up and Fat Mike at South by Southwest, having played one of those crazy outdoor all-day party events.
Mess with Texas.
Mess with Texas, that
Yeah.
was it. There was just like it was I look back on that now and I'm like, oh man, like I think I appreciated it when it was happening. But the fact that, yeah, you were going down to Texas playing with like all your favorite bands and seeing bands you had no idea about and getting a bunch of free food. Yeah, you were getting no sleep. Yeah, you were mainly drinking energy drinks instead of water. But what a time to be alive.
Well, the beauty of that scenario is, we come from a certain, we pretty much fit into a certain genre of music.
Yep.
And throughout my musical career, it's been one punk rock marathon after another, where it's all of a sudden you're playing with five other bands and it becomes a blur. You can't tell the difference between the majority of the bands. When Off started and we took our stance, we started playing with bands we wouldn't have played with in a million years. And that was, I love that. Like I said, playing with Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark and TV on the Radio, that became part of our norm. Playing Primavera, having the promoter, one of the main promoters, the main guy, pull me aside. We're playing one of the Primaveras, and it's Wilco and Yola Tango and a bunch of other great bands like that. That have nothing to do with the genre of music that we're playing, and everybody's appreciative of everybody else's music. And the promoter, after we get through playing, said, of course he's wearing a Minutemen t-shirt because they're his favorite band. South Bay, Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Red Cross, Alley Cats, The Last, we're all South Bay. Pennywise, he's telling me that that group of bands are his favorite bands. And here's this guy that's got to book this festival with all of these other artists that have nothing to do with the genre that he loves. So that's one of the things that's been happening with a lot of these major music festivals is that they will sprinkle bands like us amongst all of the other bands. I'm sure it's been the same for you guys. It's like, hey, we can't, because of the cost of touring, we can't blow off any shows like that. We need that income to get us to the next venue that we're supposed to play. We need that income to pay for our flights back and forth over there, and to pay for the fuel, and to pay for the rental of the vehicle, and all of the other expenses that come along with touring.
Pasta and barbecue.
No, that's free.
Well, yeah, you know what? But at what cost? Sometimes free pasta and free barbecue is the most expensive meals that you will ever have at some point.
That's too
Save
true.
you out a little bit.
When they feed you before the show, that's a big risk.
You don't really eat before what you 2
No,
hours.
I've had I've had steak and potatoes
Wow.
with steamed broccoli 15 minutes before we
Oh,
play.
wow. I've eaten during a show before.
I could eat during a show better than I could eat before a show. 'Cause if it's like if I'm eating during the show, I don't think it's gonna have a chance to settle in my stomach and then be able to come back up in the same sort of way. I know, probably I've puked on stage about 4 or 5 times, and it's well, goes without saying, it's never pretty. But it certainly, I always regret it. I've got a 5 hour window. If I eat within 5 hours, I'm gonna feel sick on stage.
Really?
Yeah. I can snack like a
Wow.
couple chips here and there, but and I also Wilco is punk. Jeff Tweedy was on this podcast. He must have been stoked to see you.
I didn't get to converse with him, but one of our local guys, Nels Klein, pulled me aside and said, "Keith, I'm going to come and see you guys play today." And I will never forget walking back from the area that we played, because our stage was pushed way off to the side by where they repair all of the boats.
Classic.
Just shove them back there by all of the boats that need to be repaired. As I'm walking past a certain part of the venue or the site, there's a kind of a bridge that goes from one part of the site to another, and all of a sudden I'm hearing this voice, "Keith, Keith, that was great, Keith, Keith, up here." And I'm looking up and it's Nails. He's like waving, and, "That was great. I'm so
Where
glad
was
that I
he?
saw you."
Was he like in the crow's nest of one of these boats or something?
No, he was crossing over the big bridge. Because that side is ridiculously large. It's like to get from one site to the other takes half a day.
Is there
Wow.
any, because you've had, so many different chapters in your career, obviously you've written a book, but is there any that you kind of look at more fondly than others in terms of the high points? I mean, not necessarily the low points, because like the original kind of punk explosion, or when the Circle Jerks are kind of taking off, or when you guys came back for that reunion tour and you kind of, versus with Off, like, is there any, or do you kind of look at it as just being one cohesive journey?
Well, there are certain bits and pieces that are outstanding, and then there's certain bits and pieces that are just scraping the bottom. And I just look at it as it's all part of the adventure. It's all part of the trip. If everything was smooth and you were making lots of money and all of the rock star BS, that's fine and that's wonderful. But some of the lows were actually very enlightening, to the point where I can't be like this. I don't want to be here. What am I going to be able to do to elevate myself? So it's almost working a program. You're going to encounter, like, if you're working steps, you're going to encounter certain things that you maybe aren't very proud of, but you did them and you lived through them and you're past them and you learned from them.
Yeah, because I guess that's what it is. It's got to be one day at a time, and it's got to be a learning journey.
I have had a pretty amazing journey, and I'm not through yet. Still got a few things that need to happen.
Definitely. Well, I got to play with you in a couple days, practically. So we got that ahead of us, certainly.
About 2.5 weeks away.
Yeah. I know, I'm packing my bags right now. I'm getting ready. This will be my first tour in a while.
Well, I'm lucky because I just got back from Europe off of that NOFX tour, and my travel bag's sitting on the floor in my bedroom, and it's filled with everything that comes along on the next trip.
Already packed. I usually pack like an hour before I'm supposed to leave. So.
Yeah, I'm kind of more the same way. I only have so many pairs of underwear, and I don't want to do laundry while I'm on the road. So I gotta do laundry and pack the underwear pretty close to go time.
Well, it's all about the underwear and the socks. Clean underwear and clean socks. Because the shirts, they're going to get sweaty. They're going to get wet. And I just learned I'll wear that stinky, sweaty shirt that I wore 6 nights ago. Because I can squeeze another 3 or 4 nights out of it.
I think my band would be very upset with me if I tried to squeeze any more than like one night out of these shirts or one or two nights. I now douse myself in water on stage because I find it's almost like a shower or being in like the
Oh yeah.
washing machine.
There's nothing like being able to immediately go into a shower, or better yet, I played a festival almost 10 years ago with Trail of Dead, and there was a lake right next to the stage. So I played the show, threw up, as I sometimes do after a show, and then just jumped right into the lake. And that was very re refreshing. I felt like Prince saying, to cleanse myself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka or something. It was very refreshing. I'm glad I did it in that order too.
Did you ever play that venue in Switzerland where there's like a lake right outside the
Yep.
venue? I ran and did
Yeah.
that one time after we finished the set, just ran and jumped right in the water. I was already in my underwear by that point, so.
Did it, speaking of a band from Toronto, as your band is obviously, we performed that show with Japandroids.
Vancouver.
I thought, but I'm pretty, Brian moved to Toronto.
I think Brian's in Mexico, isn't he?
Brian is in Mexico now, but at the time, for several years, he moved to Toronto. I remember because I don't know if you were able to make it to this one trail show, but I was walking outside of Lee's Palace and Brian came in, saw the show, and we had a great time. And he said, "You know what? You're going to Chicago next. Let's go by my house, pick up my passport. I'm coming with you to Chicago from Toronto." And we move our tour bus in this tiny residential area. It was probably illegal to drive a tour bus down this tiny street. He gets his passport. We're driving like maybe 2 hours in, maybe halfway or so to Toronto, but haven't crossed to Chicago rather. And at the last minute before we cross the border, Brian's like, "I can't do this." And he jumps off and takes the train back to Toronto. So at the time, he was at least in Toronto for long enough to come to our show at Lee's, contemplate going with us across the border, and then changing his mind last minute and going back to Toronto. But yeah, he is in Mexico now.
That's major Toronto band energy. So yeah,
Yeah, dude. He was living the life, the Toronto band life for a minute.
Yeah, well, it's funny when you get to play those shows at those venues where there is that opportunity to do it, but then otherwise, when you have to go for the drive afterwards, you're just sitting in your filth. And
Yeah.
I'm glad, like I always try and bring a lot of shirts. So then that's why you're on tour with bands. You can always get another shirt from another band too. So I find you can pack ahead of time sometimes and get ready for these things. It's going to be a intense psychological warfare with the band. We haven't been on tour, I think, since we saw you in Europe.
Wow, that
That's
was 7 months ago.
yeah, it was 7 months ago.
You guys typically do a lot of fly-ins and not a lot of sustained touring, right?
Yeah, we did in the before time, but I don't know if that kind of, well, at least we're fucked up. That kind of touring doesn't really exist anymore. We're just more like a get in the van, go out for 10 to 14 days. A lot of silence.
That's a sweet spot, though.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what we realized. Like beyond that, we just aren't really good with each other. We probably pushed it like 3 weeks, but in somewhere like Australia or something, where it's like a vacation more than a tour.
Yeah, we just did Australia and New Zealand, and we were there for about 3 weeks.
Was it your guys' own tour or was it a festival tour?
It's our own tour. We started in New Zealand, played a couple, well, played Raglan, New Zealand, played a few places that I'd never been to and probably never will go to again. I feel like we played Hobart, Tasmania, Raglan, New Zealand, and mainly fly-ins too. I think there was only one or two shows where we drove.
Yeah, but that's the way that you tour in Australia.
I feel like I prefer a couple weeks, 3 weeks max, driving anywhere, whether it's Europe or North America. Flying, I feel, takes more out of me. The anxiety of going through security and missing a flight and checking everything. Once I'm on tour, I like to stay in whatever mode of transportation that we've set from the start. Flying just can be ideal if it's like a one-off or a weekender, but I'm in the wrong business because I really don't like to fly.
I find it's harder to settle in when you're flying every day. Like it feels glamorous. You get to feel like you're Led Zeppelin or something, but the reality is it's like packing every day, getting ready for security. You're sitting at a gate, getting on that plane, getting off that plane, and it, as glamorous as it sounds, it definitely does not feel glamorous on an extended tour of doing that kind of thing.
The rigmarole is the hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
There's just way too much of that for just about everything that we do. Being in a band, there is so much of that attached to what we're doing. It can get draining at times. I mean, you get into a groove and it's okay. You know, now I, instead of eating continental breakfast, I get to experience Mexican food in the airport at in Melbourne. Or, you know, I actually had some really, I had some pretty decent Mexican food in one of those main airports in Australia. Like, you would be surprised. This isn't supposed to be like this.
Yeah.
Good Mexican food in Sydney, Australia. They somehow have perfected the taco. And us being from Southern California, you know, we're very, very particular about our Mexican food. But it's nice to travel around and have a meal in a place where you have no idea that it would be so good. You know, it's like, how am I having amazing like Chinese food and Czech Republic or something like that? It happens every once in a while.
Yeah, rarely with Mexican food. Never in England for me yet with Mexican food. But I long for the day to have a great
They're still
taco.
working on most foods in England. I think they're still a work in progress for just about everything.
I feel as now that I eat vegan, my standard has gone down to a much different level in terms of food. And England's amazing for vegan food. There's so many
Okay.
vegan options. So I'm quite satisfied with British cuisine. But once again, I'm looking at it from, like kind of a 60% enjoyment level already.
What, you know what? If the bar is that low, then you know, England is the place to go,
England's the
honestly.
place. What was it like back then, though, Keith, versus now with touring? Because I'm sure, like you tell, last time you were on the show, you talked about when you guys were in the Circle Jerk. Sometimes you'd go to a town and have to wait like 3 or 4 days before you'd find another show to go to on those early tours.
Well, we would a lot of those early tours, we would be away from home, away from Los Angeles, anywhere from 2.5, 3 months to 4 months. You know, we would be in situations where we would pull up to the venue and it was a bar. So we knew that we were going to be playing for all the alcoholics and the drunks and everybody like that later on in the evening. But there'd be 7 or 8 kids out front, 20 kids out front, you know, hounding us if we're going to be able to like get them in for the show. And we would just go in and we'd immediately go to the first person that looked like they had anything to do with being in charge of the venue and say, look, can we open the doors early and play an early show for all of the kids that are out on the sidewalk? And we would end up there. There were weeks of us playing two shows a night just to be able to play for a handful of kids. And that was grueling. But at the same time, being a cokehead and being an alcoholic, a lot of times I wasn't worried about any of that stuff. It's like, just bring it on, let's do it. So we would go out and hope for the best, and for us would have been an all ages show, which at that time were few and far between. Now, the beauty of the all ages show nowadays for us, there was a point in time when the Circle Jerks went through Florida and we were playing shows normally in rooms where there'd be a minimum 900 to 1500 people, and there'd be 50 people, 75 people, a couple of hundred people.
Oh, we've
And
all
that
been
was,
there.
well, that was when I said, we can't continue to burn the promoters just because our booking agent waved social distortion in front of them. You know, we're waved at that time, it would have been Bad Religion and Social Distortion, you know, bands that would pull into town and sell out. So it was kind of like, well, if you don't do the Circle Jerks, you know, the social distortion's going to be out in 5 months. You want social distortion? You're going to have to do the Circle Jerks. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. Now, I don't think that happens now because we're in a situation where the kids are just piling in. Xander, this is one of my favorite things. We would get in conversations with Xander, who is pitching his solo album, and he would go out to the merch table after we got through playing to see if he could sell a handful of his solo albums, you know, sign them and have whoever's buying it get their picture taken with them. And he took it upon himself to start asking a very, very, very important question. And that is, why are you here? Why did you come to see the Circle Jerks? And the consensus was, we're tired of the new music. We're tired of all of this fake, phony music. We want to see something that's real. And that's part of our sales pitch. You know, come all these kids who saw the decline of Western civilization or saw American hardcore or whatever, all of these documentaries that are coming out now, and they want to be a part of it. That's cool, man. Look at that. I want to do that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I was shocked at how young the audience was in the Descendants Circle Jerks adolescent show. Like,
Yeah, I just saw that bill in Brooklyn at an incredible venue that was just recently renovated and opened and had a great time. It's very cool to see Keith, being a bandmate of mine and off, and then and a friend, obviously, and a neighbor, and then to see him in Circle Jerks, and it's an entirely different beast to see someone that you work with and perform with in a different context and see thousands of kids with banners and, children of all ages, from 15, even younger, on to, both of our ages. It's really awesome.
Yeah, like, do you want to wait for that? I'll wait for that.
No, I'm not going to answer that. It's
Okay.
just let it ring. Yeah.
Okay, go through.
Dude, you would not believe how many calls I get from these people. Well, you're on this medical program. We have these things that you need to do, and are you doing them? And you got to call us back. And I would like go on tour and come back, and there'd be 40 of these messages on my machine. There'd be 41 messages, and there would be one message that I would really return.
Just give them your credit card info and social security number.
Well, that's like you're what you're saying, Autry, about Keith is like Keith to me, and not to talk about you like you're not in the room, Keith, but Keith is like one of the realest people to come out of any era of punk because at the same time he could be playing just being, oh, I'm this icon from this band and I'm going to go and play these songs that people want to see. You went out and did off, and you kind of built this whole new thing and carved it from the ground up on like a real legit level, not playing on the Circle Jerks, but like kind of making this own separate thing that existed. And like last time I saw you in Toronto, you crashed out on the couch in the green room after the show with your blanket being your jacket, you know, like it's not this sort of glamorous, precious lifestyle that a lot of people wind up kind of cocooning themselves with at a certain point after being in a band. And I think a lot of that comes down to ego. A lot of people's egos are pretty fragile. I say this with someone with a glass ego. But I don't see it in the same way. Like I guess it manifests itself differently, but like with you're just like about the music.
We all share that same jacket as a blanket. All four of us. Sometimes a TM. We're all under it.
Well, not to put a plug in for any fashion company, but the jacket is a Ruka jacket, and it's a medium. It's a size medium, so it fits me kind of loosely, but it's good for colder weather because it hangs down a little bit lower, and there's big thick cuffs on it. Damien, I come from working class, so it's almost like we're working, there for us, if there's any glamour, I very, very, very rarely see it. If there's any rock star bullshit, I see it on certain occasions, but it's not going to come from me. All I need are some dry towels and a case of room temperature bottle water, and I'm good. If there's some candy bars, or there's you can make a peanut butter sandwich, that's great, but just all I need are the basic necessities.
And that Ruka jacket in medium. Use the code Keith July 4 to get a discount all weekend.
Oh, I wish they were a sponsor. Yeah, get on it. Get on a sponsor this thing.
I gotta get one now.
It did feel like that's kind of instilled in the very start with the way you guys are doing things with Black Flag too, is that like this is like a job being in a band. And it's not necessarily gonna get famous, get you famous. It's not necessarily ever gonna be glamorous. A lot of times it probably isn't gonna be very fun, but you're going to do it because this is the job.
and the high when we're playing. You know, that's a buzz you can't buy. You don't just get to go to your doctor and tell your doctor to prescribe you some good feelings, some juice, some like electricity going on between you and the people in front of you.
And the people behind you. It's so awesome to be able to get with your friends, create music, create a set, and then to be able to play that in front of people that came to see you do this. It's a very unique experience, and it's definitely a privilege. And it is a job. And every job has its challenges, and it can be tough sometimes. And if you're beyond that 2 or 3 week sweet spot of touring with travel and all that, it could be a bit tedious. But that feeling being on stage, playing music with your buddies, two people that came with their friends to see you, is indescribable. It's euphoric. It's like unmatched.
That's probably the purest part of being in the band is that actual moment of performance. But the rest of the time with it, I think that's where the work comes in. Obviously, the physical work of loading in some cases and driving to the shows, but also just sort of like the psychological wrestling match. Not that I don't wind up doing that to myself on stage sometimes, but like, why am I doing this? What is this for? Like writing a song, agonizing, is this the right lyric to put here? Like just all sorts of different sort of internal conflicts that go into producing something, I don't know, art, I guess. But that moment where you're on stage and where you can truly just surrender yourself to it, like you're saying, yeah, there's no other drug like it, which is probably why I need to use weed to get through the rest of the time in the band. Because it's not the same as the high of being on stage, which I guess the idle hands on tour, right? That's why the alcohol stuff becomes such a problem for every band. Drugs become such a problem for every band. It's because you have so much downtime, and because you're constantly chasing that high that you got the night before on stage.
Yeah. Well, I love to do it. I feel like it's been definitely a privilege of mine in my life to be surrounded by people that I admire and I respect. And I always say I have the best seat in the house. I get to be on stage, not just in the audience or side stage, seeing my friends do what they do. And it's awesome. And it's great to be able to play like we are in a couple of weeks' time with your band too, and get a free ticket to see Fucked Up.
It's gonna be amazing. I can't, I'm
Yeah,
really,
that's gonna be. That's gonna be. We're gonna have a great time. And there's so much really great food in that neighborhood.
yes.
It's a good neighborhood. The room is really, really cool.
It really, and I'm like, it's gonna sound like I'm overstating it 'cause we're on the air, but like the emotion of playing with you guys for the last time, knowing it's like the last time to run into you guys, is kind of like a heavy thing to kind of sit with, on a completely selfish level. Because running to you guys on the road, playing with you guys on the road over the years has been like the real high point of doing this. At times where there's been a lot of low points, you know, there's a lot of low points in being in a band and just knowing, even on that last European run, running in, playing with you guys twice and getting to hang out with you guys twice, it's like truly one of the blessings of doing this thing.
Yeah, I think it is bittersweet to a degree, but I know personally I'm going into it just very thankful that we got to do what we do and that we're able to play with some friends in a few cities and debut this film with some screenings and you know Q&As together. I feel like it puts a bow on the experience of playing with Off, at least as you know when I joined and we were able to make this record and this film. So it will be to me celebratory more so than sad. And I'm very thankful that you're going to be a part of the send-off.
Well, and here's another part of this. You know, we kind of set a bar for ourselves, and we've had a an incredibly amazing run. And we want to go out on a high note. And with the movie coming out, people are still going to get to see us because there's some live footage of us in the movie. Of course, we're playing with DH Pellegrino, but we're leaving on an incredibly high note.
Oh, absolutely. I meant on a purely selfish level, but otherwise it is, yeah, an amazingly perfect bittersweet send-off. Like, you can't top making a movie, you know? Like Michael Jackson never really overachieved beyond making that Disneyland Captain Nemo movie that he made, right? Like, the movie is the greatest thing a band could ever hope to achieve.
Yeah, it's cool to think about all the other music-based films that I love. And it is rare for a band to do that. But also on this level, where it's not a documentary, it's actually like a sci-fi comedy film where we're playing these different roles that are, have a little bit of semi-autobiographical, elements to it. But at the same time, it's such a trip, no pun intended. To see everyone perform in this capacity. And it's very unique, and I'm very thankful to be a part of it.
Rare to think like Prince, Purple Rain. I'm running through band movies in my head. I guess the Desperate Teenage Love Dolls with the McDonald Brothers. It's not. It's rare. A band like a movie, like not a documentary, like a movie. Movie. It's not every day a band achieves that. I'm excited to see the movie.
You've got the monkey's head with Jack Nicholson and
Oh
Frank
yeah.
Zappa, and then Frank Zappa had his own movie, 200 Motels. You got Pink Floyd, The Wall. You've got all of those Beatles movies that are all fun and exciting.
Tommy, the Who.
Yeah, I hope more bands do it, honestly. I hope that this becomes something that, especially in this day and age where bands have to approach, interacting with their fans and engaging with an audience on a different level because the internet age and the fact that people don't tour tiny markets as much as they used to, the way people consume music videos and live performances has definitely evolved in this day and age. So I hope that this becomes something that more and more bands find like fun and important to do. Because
Well,
every band is like a movie. Every band is like this comedy and tragedy. Every band has its own unique kind of incredible story of triumphs and catastrophes. So I think every band story, no matter how big or small, is probably pretty interesting.
a cartoon.
It's a cartoon. Scooby-Doo.
I love the idea of thinking of a band as being more than just the music that you're making and putting out there. Like the band could be. The presentation can be the design element of it could be like conceptual, like, you know, the conceptual brilliance of a band is what makes that band great. Otherwise, it's just, you know, a bunch of good songs. Like, that's why certain bands kind of have that staying power is because they have this sort of vibe or they have this sort of like approach to it that goes beyond just the song craft. Like the Beatles, right? Like the Beatles weren't just these great songs. They were also movies and, you know, a brilliant manager behind the scenes.
Well, and then when they formed Apple, when they formed Apple, Apple was more than just a record label. They had a fashion offshoot, which was there was a group called The Fool, who were basically fashion people before they were a musical group. But Apple also had, because of George Harrison, a film division, and Apple had purchased a Terry Southern story, Flash and Filigree. One of the guys we worked with on the Off movie, Free LSD, knows Terry Southern's son, and they were able to get the rights The Beatles owned the rights to Flash and Filigree and wrote four different scripts based on that book. And none of the scripts worked. In their minds, it was not happening. And so our friends got it. And that's one of the things that a couple of us are looking at further down the road. Once we get through doing our, we're going to show the movie in probably a dozen different theaters. And that means that there will be questions and answers, which means Dimitri and I will be showing up. Hopefully, some of the other people can make it. We wouldn't expect anybody to accompany us to the Arctic or the Sahara Desert when we do presentations there.
It'd be Arctic. It's pretty warm right now. Yeah, Arctic sounds really nice right now.
Don't hold me to that. I'm just being facetious. But we I live right around the corner from a theater called the Vista Theater that's owned by Quentin Tarantino. And I when the word came down we're going to be doing these questions and answers, I said, well, let's can we show the movie for 2 weeks at the Vista Theater? And it doesn't work that way because you have to rent the theater. The theater isn't like, well, this is such a great movie. Well, not only will we show it for 2 weeks, but we'll show it for an extra 2 weeks. And it doesn't work like that anymore. So, we got all of the people at the Vista Theater to say, yes, we want to show your movie. We want to do a questions and answers. But the main guy, Quentin Tarantino, has been a no-show. I mean, he showed up, he was at the big French movie festival in the Mediterranean, but he's trying to raise money for his new movie and he's having a difficult time and he's kind of bummed out because it's supposed to be his last movie. So it's like all of the people at the Vista Theater are like, he's not talking to any of us. He's barely talking to his manager, that kind of a thing. But we have a bunch more coming up.
Maybe that's him right now.
Mr. Tarantino, how are you doing?
Wouldn't it be like the most fitting artistic statement if his final movie is just him not being able to make a movie? Like that to me is the ultimate statement of cinema, is that he just isn't able to make this final film. He spends the entire time looking for funding.
That's a great idea for a movie.
Yeah, like someone's got to make it just a movie. The final Quentin Tarantino movie's got to be a documentary about Quentin Tarantino's struggle to make his final movie that he was never able to complete. There, we've just done it. We've written the end chapter for the
Did
Quentin
it.
Tarantino
We did
story
it.
right there.
Someone found this thing.
People will love it because you'll have Brad Pitt, you'll have all of the people that have appeared in all of the other movies.
That foot sign from LA that tells you whether you're going to have a good or bad day is going to be in
Yeah, there will be feet.
Jodorowsky also, didn't he punch out the guy from Apple Records or
I
like
don't
Apple
know.
Film? I think that was like the deal. Like one of his films, like they had the rights to, and they were holding it, and he like socked the dude, and that's why the film never got reissued ever.
Well, Rolling Stones also had a production company called Abco, and I believe they put out the Rolling Stones Abco put out Holy Mountain, and I don't know if what connection. I believe John Lennon may have been involved in the funding of Holy Mountain as well. Who knows? I'd like to know who. It's like who shot Andy Warhol? Who did Jodorowsky punch out?
We got to hit up King Khan. Arsh is like tight with him. He
Oh
was
yeah.
telling me on the podcast he was like his tarot card instructor, like mentor for tarot card readings.
Oh wow. The fact that Jodorowsky is 95 years old and still active, making amazing film, very active on Facebook, which tracks for a 95-year-old, I would say. But it's just great that good art still prevails and keeps someone alive and hungry to continue to make really cool art.
Yeah, I'm always like blown away by people that can continue to find that inspiration to make something. And like yourself, Keith, like, so to kind of keep doing it and to like be like, this is my passion. Like, that's what separates someone from, I guess, being like a filmmaker or a musician and being an artist, is because you dedicate your life to it. I forget, someone told me that on the podcast, like, that's a true artist is like someone that's just lives their art, to like live your art completely. And that's what sort of the working band is, where you're finding a way to live the art of being in a band as your life, where it's never necessarily comfortable, but there's always a jacket to curl up underneath somewhere and stay warm.
Well, I have the jacket.
And it's, I know,
we hanging in that closet.
Size medium.
It would not fit me at all. I think I would, it would be like a bib on me. It'd be very high on you, Autry.
Probably.
Well, we could go to Stephen McDonald, because he got the same jacket when when it was time, when Ruka asked us what we wanted out of the catalog. I ordered the same jacket Stephen ordered, but his is, because he's much taller, he probably got a large or an extra large.
That's what I was going to say. He would definitely be a rock, a jacket above the navel. I could completely see Stephen being completely chill with that, but I could see him also getting a longer jacket.
And have you heard the new Red Cross album?
Fantastic.
It's pretty fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Hooray for them.
Yeah. Like,
I'd say this as a bass player, just watching some footage of Red Cross last night, he's so cool to watch. He's so animated and obviously really good at his instrument, but I love watching Steve. And I think part of the allure of Off for years for me was just how everyone individually brings so much to the band. Mario, Steve, Dimitri, and of course Keith. Like, I would wear an Off hat often when I was playing in Trail of Dead and we were touring. I believe we have at least a few photos where I'm wearing an Off hat myself, and pictures that you and I took over a decade ago. So
absolutely,
big shoes to fill. It's not really filling the shoes, it's just a different chapter, it's a different season or era of the cartoon, but it's great to see Steve.
Well, there's very few people I could see getting into that position that he'd been as a bass player and being able to hold it like you do. Like, there's just, you're like one of the most entertaining, you and him are my two of my favorite bass players to watch on stage. And just like,
oh man,
you like yeah, just, I love watching guys play.
Oh, dude, likewise. Love watching you play. I love bands where I can't predict what's going to happen next. There's an element of unpredictability, of almost danger. And I feel like with you, you're one of the most compelling frontmen that I've ever seen. Like, legendary, even before we met. And the fact that I've known you for over a decade now, you still entertain and mesmerize me on stage. So, well, really awesome.
I appreciate that. Like, like, that's it, you know, like, the fact that I'm getting to go on tour and play with Off and then Red Cross in two weeks is like, I'm living my fucking fantasy. Like, the first punk CDs I ever bought, other than the stuff that I had around the house with my dad, like my dad had and stuff, was like, I bought Violent Femmes, because I consider them punk, CD, and I bought the Circle Jerks double album on CD. And those are like the first two things I bought. And that's like how I got into this thing. So here I am years later, like, living out my my fantasy, just getting to play with my heroes and getting to be part of this sort of like culture that I grew up just peering in from the outside, dreaming about being involved in. There's very few places like that you can kind of just like be someone with no musical ability, no talent. Like I didn't work at all learning an instrument, work at my craft. I just went up there and just did something and wound up being able to do it professionally. Like you can't do that as a fucking doctor. You can't just show up one day and just start like cutting someone and being like, I'm a surgeon now. You can't even do that as a pro wrestler.
Right. Some people have tried to get away with it.
When are we going to when are we going to perform some brain surgery?
We do every night when we make that brain stew with the people's heads. You know?
Speaking of brain stew, what I love is just the fact that you clearly love so much music, and not just punk rock, but you're inspired and influenced by so much music. And that really shows in Fucked Up's records. Like every record that you make, especially like the Year of the Horse in particular, there are parts of that record that I'm like, wow, this is coming from people that have such a deep knowledge and love of music. And I think that's always cool as a band when you can display your love for music and what you're taking in, and then what you interpret from the music that you love into an album of your own. So I've always been very impressed by every record that you guys have put out, because it's elevates all of the music that you love, all the genres, all the iterations of punk or hardcore. And it's just incredible to always hear something that's innovative and taking music to the next level.
Well, thank you very much, and I will I accept that and appreciate that to a point. But my true skillotry is that I'm able to surround myself with much more talented people than myself. So I'm able to look
I
like
feel
I'm
it. I
doing
feel
these
the
things.
same way. Yeah, I feel the same way.
Well, that's like, especially with Year of the Horse, where I remember recording that record and going in the studio, and Dylan, who I record all my vocals with, like we don't ever see anyone from Fucked Up when we're recording. So it was like him and I hearing the song for the first time as we're recording it, being like, whoa, this is insane. This is a really weird song. And I feel for that song. I was just lucky to be involved in it because all I did was show up and kind of do my vocals. The rest of it was like Jonah and Mike just becoming obsessed with opera and learning about the structure of it and trying to kind of write something to that sort of structure. And I just benefited. I was just a
Man,
guy, like, okay,
I
yeah.
really appreciate it. You know how people say that if you feel like you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. I feel like the same goes for being in a band. If you feel like you are the most talented person in the room, then you're probably in the wrong band. And I feel like I've always surrounded myself with people that are so incredible, like living legends. With what they do as an in the band, as a guitarist, drummer, vocalist, it's always nice to feel constantly inspired and motivated to keep elevating yourself as a musician or as a member of the band. And I've never ever felt like I don't have more to learn or more to appreciate and grow with the people that I've played with. So I feel very lucky.
Well, you hit my nail directly on the head with your hammer. And that is, I've been extremely fortunate because I'm wearing the same shoes you're wearing, maybe not the same size, but I've been fortunate to have surrounded myself by the people that I've played with. I've been extremely fortunate, and I've been complimented on this several dozen times, that I've always played with some incredible drummers. Lucky Lair being jazz, Chuck Biscuits being the guy that stands at the forest and he's gonna just level the trees. Justin.
Justin Brown.
Having played with Herbie Hancock and showing up and saying, guys, I got to tell you something before we play any further. And that is, I'm not playing these songs the same way every time I play them. So he's kept us on our toes. Yeah. I mean, that's like, where are we at? What are we doing? Everything's blowing up. And it's like, luckily we're standing on this piece of sidewalk where nothing's falling over. Mario, yeah. Coming from John Bonham school, Mario and I get in a conversation about drummers, our favorite drummers, and he's talking about Simon Kirk, who is one of the most simple drummers. Brian Walsby just did a little series with Phil Rudd, the drummer from AC/DC. Was it Ringo and Charlie Watts? They're just basic drummers that are not going to get in anybody's way. They're going to add their little bits and pieces here and there to toss in their personality. But it's like, I got to make this song just move along. So we're talking about Simon Kirk, who is the drummer from Free, who it doesn't get any more basic than that. And I'm kind of scratching my head like, well, you're talking about John Bonham, who is this incredibly, he can be extremely flashy at times, and he's playing behind the beat, he's playing in front of the beat, he's, playing around the beat. And then we're talking about somebody as simple and basic as Simon Kirk. And I've seen Simon Kirk probably play about a dozen times.
That's the thing that's amazing about drummers and the approach that a drummer has, is that it can be something super simplistic and that can make the band. It can be like Mo Tucker, and like the it can be that kind of like super primitive sounding drum, which is just makes that those records pop. But then it can be someone like super flashy, like Joey C, like it could be someone who's like a ripper crazy drummer too. I love watching Mario play and then watching like Bill Stevenson play, because I can't think of two more different approaches to hitting a snare drum, but both are just like poetry to kind of watch. And I don't know how to play drums at all.
Man, it's great to be able to play, back playing with Conrad and Jason and Jamie Miller, who now is in Bad Religion, and Conrad and Jason from Trail of Dead. The fact that there were three drummers that I played with every night was pretty incredible, and they each had their own unique style that I loved. And then playing with Justin and Mario with the off record, Free LSD is an album that was recorded where any drummers that are playing those songs have an opportunity to improvise and to toy with the arrangement rhythmically. And there's been so many moments, usually every night, regardless of who I'm playing with, whether it's Justin behind the kit or Mario, where I have to turn around and I'm like, are you kidding me? That was so amazing. You did it again. You did something very unique every night. You're changing it up. And it goes back to having a great seat in the house to see some people you admire really killing it. Like, it's amazing to have the opportunity to watch your friends really shine while you're on stage performing the songs right in that moment.
Yeah. You can tell it's like a good drummer when like Maskus is sitting side stage watching him, and he's always watching Mario just kind of like destroy that drum, like just hit it so
fucking hard. They played together.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Which? Oh, no, when, not which. What did they play together?
Sweet Apple? Not Sweet Apple. They were playing one of the Metallic festivals, one of the Metallic hardcore punk rock festivals. Every year they would get together. They wouldn't rehearse. They would just get together and they would play on stage. Was it Witch?
Was it Witch? I thought Jay played drums in Witch, though. No, Jay played drums in Sweet Apple, so maybe it was Witch. No, did Kyle from... oh, my God. Okay, I'm going to fix this in the intro. I want to break down the entire history of this band and figure out who played where and who
Well,
did
good
what.
luck with that, because now you're going to take up 45 minutes of your podcast.
That's what my intros normally should
Who's
be. The,
played with who, when and where and why, and
I feel like this podcast really does need like a touch screen component to have like links to like the family trees that could come out of these sorts of conversations of like who wound up playing where and like look at Biscuits, look at all the bands Biscuits played in and all the different worlds he connects.
Jay and Mario alone have at least what I'd say close to a dozen bands that they've played in that are incredible. So,
Yep.
yeah.
No one though beats Chuck Treese's discography. He's the only person in the world that's played with a member of Vegan Reich and played on a Billy Joel record and played on a Roots record and played on a Schoolie D record. It's ridiculous.
Impressive.
Yeah, it's like insane.
All
We
good record.
all great records in their genres, all all acclaimed in their own spaces too. But that's the great thing about this thing is that, like, punk was always just a place that anyone could kind of come to. No matter what your skill level is, and you could kind of find a space to kind of make something in it, and it's valid to somebody. El Duce, there's a documentary about the mentors, so there's love for everybody out there. Do you remember the first time you met him, Keith?
Oh, it was ridiculous. He'd pissed his pants and was asking for beer. And one night I actually watched him almost break the bass player from, oh crap, what's Alice in Chains? There was a show over at the Troubadour over in West Hollywood. I forget who it was, but El Duce was there. Couple of the guys from Alice in Chains, and the bass player from Alice in Chains spotted El Duce and wanted to introduce himself. And so he put his hand out, and El Duce grabbed his hand and squeezed it so tight the guy almost cried. It was like, El Duce, what are you doing? You know? Oh, and the sandwich of love, one below and one above. It was ridiculous. I knew better because I'd seen El Duce do that before. El Duce was just brutal. I mean, he was a sweetheart, and the persona of him being in the Mentors, that was not the person that he was. That was like a total made up character. He was extremely smart. He at one point had been in a band with Tamara Duplante from the Screamers. And Tamara is just, he's just ridiculously intelligent. Incredibly intelligent. RIP. RIP to all of these guys.
The sandwich of love will haunt me for the end of my days, till the end of my days. Wow.
That is a terrifying story, but also like I'm obsessed with that band from Seattle. Like that this because I think Nikki Sixx was in it too for like a minute as well. Like it was like a real who's who of sort of Seattle proto-punk people showing up in there. And it's yeah, it's well, have you watched that Mentors documentary?
I've not.
Haven't.
That is a wild watch. It's on it's for free, you can watch it, just Google it. And it is very intense. But anyway, I won't spoil it for anyone. You guys can watch it, and it's
Well, have you seen Get Up and Die?
what's the no, what's that one?
That's a movie with El Duce in it. My friend Pete, who played drums in Thelonious Monster, he was part of the group of people that made it. I don't know the history of the movie. It's not a documentary, it's a movie.
Oh, is it like from back in the day, back in like 83 would have come out?
Yeah.
I have a flyer for that I picked up one time in Amoeba. They had a bunch of, flyers for sale, and I grabbed the flyer for that movie. Oh shit, I've never seen it. I've just had the flyer for it. That's wild. You got to do like a film fest, Keith. Take this thing on the road with all these punk movies. Free LSD, get a couple openers. I go to a movie night. That'd be a fun thing to do. Sort of concert, Give our ears a rest. Get to sit down on chairs, back support.
I love chairs.
I love chairs. I went to a comedy wrestling show last night. It was wrestlers doing comedy. There was no actual wrestling happening. But I got there, and when I found it was seated, oh my gosh, I nearly cried. I was so relieved at the thought I was gonna have to
Wow.
stay.
No one put a chair across anyone's back.
Nope.
Nobody wasting nobody.
Nope,
Just everyone back support.
but Johnny Knoxville showed up at the end
Oh, wow.
and low blowed Sami Zayn, who was doing the event, and put him out. And that was how it ended. So there was some physicality in the form of someone from
Wow.
Jackass showing up and bagging him. But it was packed. It
Wow.
was crazy. I've like never seen that venue that full in my life. And it was just like rabid wrestling fans. And definitely, well, let's leave it at that. Move on from the
It's
wrestling.
wild. It's a scene.
It was a scene. It was definitely like not as wild as a punk show, the audience vibe. I find the audience at wrestling is a lot more sedate than the audience at a punk show. It's kind of like it's like a slightly different vibe. But there's a lot of punk rock wrestling fans and a lot of punk rock wrestlers now as well. Like huge fans. You could probably get a job as a manager, Keith. I can make some introductions. Actually, Darby Allin, my friend. That's the guy who really wants to use some. We'll talk about this off air. This is another conversation we can have off air. Guys, this has been amazing, and I am very excited to see both of you in person, and
As
have
well as we are of you.
once
We're
literally.
looking forward to hanging out with you guys and gal.
Well, until that night and beyond, anytime you guys want to come on this show together, separate, for the fourth time each, you're both welcome.
All right. But third time's the charm.
No, don't say that. I want you guys coming back for a fourth.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.